Welcome to Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by the Sophie Health Team with founder Kaveh Mamari, herbalist Pamela Spence, and evangelist Vincent Boone. Together, we explore the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.health, reconnecting people and plants.
A very warm welcome to the show this week. Thanks for tuning in to join our conversations about managing stress and the common issues of poor sleep and anxiety, the Sophie way. We're excited to bring you guest speakers who have inspired us, people from the world of medicine, plants and beyond, to examine our different approaches to health and well-being. And our hope is that by having these conversations between people who would normally never meet, we can showcase new approaches and open up new ideas of healthcare, some that are pillars of the Sophie.health system and can support us all in new and profound ways.
If this is your first time tuning into the show, you can find out about the Sophie.health mission by visiting our Listen on Demand page on the UK Health Radio website. Episode 1 explains who we are and what we do, and from there you can see the list of distinguished guests who we've had the pleasure of interviewing each week on topics from wild food to keyhole surgery, from managing your energy to compassion in medicine. At Sophie, we have a very special vision for health, and we have created a combination of plant extracts, an application, and an online community to support people through stressful times.
Last week in episode 15, we met Trey Lowe, who is currently starring in the UK Apprentice series. He took time out of his hectic schedule to share his personal story of trauma and anxiety that troubled him through the height of his music career and how he used this as his inspiration to become a men's mental health mentor. It was a really moving interview, and if you missed it, do make sure you go to our Listen on Demand page to catch up on that.
Now, before we introduce you to this week's guest speaker, regular listeners will know that we've created a page specifically for UK Health Radio listeners who would like to join the Sophie community. And we have a special discount code for you, which is Radio50. It gives you a 50% discount off the price of a Sophie pod. You can find all of this information at join.sophie.health/radio, or just go to the UK Health Radio homepage and click on our banner and it'll direct you right there. This week, sadly, Evie can't be with us. She'll be back with us next time, but we're delighted to welcome integrative physician Dr. Stephen Dahmer back to the show.
Now, Stephen is a longtime friend of Sophie, and as an integrative physician, he uses both plant medicine, standard Western medicine, and non-chemical interventions in his clinic in New York, where he's been working as a family physician. Stephen's passion for health has taken him around the globe, learning about healing in indigenous communities, including the Maori in New Zealand, Umbanda faith healers in Brazil, traditional healers in Palau, war veterans at the San Diego Veterans Hospital, and the Navajo in the Four Corners region of the United States.
And it's some of these stories that we'd love to get into today. You know, to catch our last interview with Stephen, please head over to our Listen on Demand page and listen to episode 3, where you can hear more about Stephen's amazing career. Stephen, welcome back. And some great news, I hear. You've got some very, very cool news to share with us today.
Yeah, how are you doing? So great to be back. One, just excited to see the show growing and this content reaching more listeners. It just is so, I'm so happy to hear that for Sophie and for plants win in general. And the big news for me is I fly out Wednesday. I will start a new position on the 1st of March as the director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine. I've looked up to Dr. Weil my entire career. And obviously, as you mentioned, integrative medicine is just interwoven in everything that I've done in my career and will do. And excited for the possibilities that lie ahead with such a reputable organization with such highly esteemed colleagues.
Yeah, no, it's really, really interesting. And yeah, we were talking about it a little bit earlier. And yeah, some of the projects that they're working on are pretty exciting. So yeah, you're massive congratulations to you to getting.
I'll try not to use too many plant puns, but the seeds are being planted already for a lot of collaboration in the future, and just so many exciting projects surrounding plants and integrative medicine in general.
Yeah, no, exactly. And talking about that, like for me, one of those kind of like really interesting periods in your life, that we haven't really spoken about much yet, is that kind of like the various tribes and various people that you've lived with and experienced their life with, which I'm assuming really shaped your thinking about how medicine works. And how you work with it as well. So yeah, if you're thinking about, with that kind of background, can you tell us a bit more about how that all came to be?
Yeah, I've had the tremendous pleasure of, working with so many healing modalities around the globe. And the number of stories, I just was thinking about this in preparation for the podcast, the number of stories of plants and how they've influenced me are just innumerable. And obviously tried to pick a handful, and I hope to weave even a few more as we go throughout the interview today. But, first and foremost, probably one that stuck out front and center for me was during time in Brazil. And I've taken a very backroads path to medicine, I guess I would say. I don't have any physicians in my family. I've always been fascinated with health, and I've also been fascinated with the size of the world and the diversity. And that in the small corner that we inhabit, we don't have a Bible on truth. And this led to a trip where I went to the dean of my medical school and had to ask for permission to volunteer in the second largest slum in Brazil between my second and third year of med school. My dean, to his credit, tried to talk me out of it. This to this date, 25 years later, I still have to explain to license applications why I have a year in my medical school gap, and that was to volunteer in the slums of Brazil. And I have probably 15 stories on deck for that, but one that just really impressed me was here in the heart of the slums. And the poverty was remarkable. It was like nothing I had ever seen or witnessed in my entire life. But yet, in the midst of this slum, was created an amazing health community called Quatro Varas. And Quatro Varas means four sticks, which has an incredible story that I would encourage listeners to Google and search more about Quatro Varas and the story of four sticks and how four sticks are stronger together than they are on their own. And that is the idea of a community coming together. Within this community was one of what was started in Brazil called a Farmácia Viva. A Farmácia Viva meant that in the backyard of this health community was a garden that the people tended to and grew amazing plants, and actually had a laboratory on site to make those plants into medicines that they bottled and then distributed almost free of charge to those in the slum called Pirambu, that many had access to no other medications. And there it was that not only I had a first hand in watching a plant become medicine for the first time in my career, but working with the plant and the relationship that you develop with that plant, and then seeing how those could be utilized as a first line support for many people with challenging, difficult lives and health issues and symptoms, and learned about chamomile and learned of topical aloe and learned of many plants that in Brazil are just remarkable in terms of a first line utilization for people's health.
That really reminds me, Stephen, of I'm nodding away because this was some of the ways that I started to get involved with herbal medicine as well, was but I was working in Uganda, and we were out in really rural areas where there was no other medicine available. There was nothing else. And we were helping people to create these living medicine gardens. And to through the work of an organization called Animed, we were training them in how to safely prepare those. And then the communities would come together, they would grow the plants, they would learn about them, and then they would distribute them almost for free, like you said. And some of my clinical work now still supports what's going on out there. It's an incredible way to get people to reconnect sometimes with plants, because I feel like, we would have done this in our past, but when you're living in a city, like in the slums, or where we were in Uganda, my husband was in Togo, in the middle of nowhere with nothing else, people can become really disconnected from those traditions, and it's amazing to see them coming back, but maybe updated in some safety way, you know, in some ways of working with the plants that are a bit safer, or that the hygiene is changed a little bit.
Yeah,
one of the ways. Yeah,
absolutely agree. And I think that, you know, even in the introduction, you know, it was mentioned how fortunate I was to work with so many diverse cultures. The recurring theme throughout all of them is a garden. The recurring theme is the growth of medicinal plants at some place in that culture. And, you know, I think that one of the things I even catch myself saying, and one of the things I think we're working towards, is to kind of turn that upside down. Because I catch myself saying, oh, there wasn't access to medicines, right? Or this was a last resort. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, you know, we do feel that way. And I was trained that way, that this is, you know, only a last resort because there's not a pharmacy on the corner. But I think that one of the things that we're working towards is shifting that narrative, in that these should really be a first line resort. And again, dependent on the herb and dependent on how it's prepared. And like you said, the quality is so important, but flipping that narrative upside down that no, these are a fantastic first line, and some of these stronger therapeutics might be reserved for that second season.
Absolutely. And the thing I think with working with plant gardens is that you can actually, you go straight across that border into nutrition as well. So you start helping people to be growing crops for eating. So when you're, you know, it's not just about the medicine, it's about the preventative aspect of getting them to, you know, helping people grow their own food and eating nutritious food, which is also local and freely available. And then their health, you see it start to improve right across the villages we were working in. You know, the health began to improve. So they needed less intervention. When they did, they knew what to do about it. Or there would be one or two people in the community who they could speak to.
Harder, of course, in the cities themselves. But
yeah,
I kind of like wonder about that, Stephen, when you're thinking about these things and you're thinking here, you know, you're talking about the slums of Brazil, right? So still relatively, you know, kind of like, you know, weather-wise, you know, pretty conducive for growing stuff. But yeah, might be harder in New York. You know, we've got some, you know, communal spaces, but I'm not sure how easy it is to grow these kind of things. So do you think that, you know, that's something that, I don't know, in the UK or Europe or US, we need to think about, you know, if you're saying like, you know, these are the kind of plants that create medicines, right, that give us that first line of support kind of thing, and are relatively cheap, I'm assuming, to create, right? And so therefore, should there be something like that, that first line of defense kind of like medicine is relatively cheap or easy, maybe available for free? Is that something that you would think about when it comes to this kind of stuff? How do we integrate it more into modern day medicine or modern day living, I should say more, I guess?
Yeah, I think in the West, it's tough to find anything for free, right, Vincent? And I think that, you know, I think just, Pamela, I think you hit the nail on the head that the two kind of gardening and growing medicinal plants really walk hand in hand. And you'd be surprised, even Brooklyn, where I lived for a long period of time, the number of rooftop gardens and the amount of produce that can be created from that. And I think, you know, Vincent, I think even more so than kind of the economic question of the cost of these, I think more so is instilling the confidence that this is a viable path, right? And I think we're really seeing a paradigm shift related to produce, right? Related to fruits and related to vegetables grown in the garden in the back, and how important that is to get a wide variety of vegetables, and how difficult it is to get vegetables, you know, perhaps free of chemicals or other things that we don't want to ingest. And there is a growing movement of farmers markets, of growing your own produce. And I think that's come from instilling the confidence that this is important. This is important for health. This is good for activity. This is a good social connection opportunity. And I think we need to do the same thing with medicinal plants. And I think that's not unique to the West. I think oftentimes one of my biggest roles, for better or for worse, was walking in as the 6'4" white foreigner to say, wow, this is remarkable. You know, these are great things, because I think, Pamela, as you kind of hinted at, a lot of times even in their own culture, it's like, oh, that, you know, I would much rather have the fancy TV and the iPhone, right, as opposed to learning how to grow these plants that my elders have grown for generations.
Or in some of the communities we were working in, it was actually the religious establishments who had said that the plant medicine was bad because it was linked to animism of the past and the religious beliefs of the past. And so what we would do is we would first of all go to the religious establishments and we would speak to the priest or whoever it was that was there. And we would just ask them if we could build a tippy tap. And a tippy tap is just a very basic jerry can hanging up with a paddle attached to it so that you can fill it with water, tap the paddle with your foot, and you can wash your hands after you've been to the latrine. So we would start with a tippy tap. And if the priest did it, then other people would follow. And then we would start with the nutrition garden. We would be planting food and then we would move on to medicine. We were very, very cautious. So there's huge cultural consideration, of course, to take in. So I wonder, Stephen, just, oh, sorry, Karen.
I just wanted to add something to that, because during my time in Brazil, I was also very fortunate to work with a Harvard anthropologist, Dr. Marilyn Nations, in the Umbanda community. And it was very interesting at that time in Brazil, around 1999, all HIV medications were given free of charge by the Brazilian government. The challenge with it is it's a very complicated regimen, you know, up to 10, 15 medications per day that you need 98% compliance with those to truly make an impact on the virus. And it was very complex. And we actually flipped animism. There is a strong component of animism within Umbanda to utilize certain colors associated with certain days of the week and to relate those to medications to make more sense of that regimen to encourage compliance. And it just was a fantastic story where animism was such a negative thing in the past, but to rather embrace that as a way to marry, right, Western medicine and animistic or Umbanda belief, which is far more than animistic belief. But it was such a great story. And even along the lines of that, during my time there, there was a plant called Agrião do Brejo that was being used specifically for HIV. Being a Western-trained, you know, young doctor, I was very skeptical of a plant having an impact when we have a 15-drug regimen, which is what should be the treatment of choice at that time. But, you know, I think similar, and for those that didn't listen to Jan's podcast about the touching moment that he had with the little girl, I had a very similar moment in what was the Umbanda community with, and I actually wrote an essay about it, with one of the participants that was HIV positive that rested from what was called a giro, which is a kind of a dance, to have some Agrião do Brejo tea in a healing hut. And I just remember it clear as day, maybe about 45 minutes, where she just was a little bit exhausted from the fatigue and really suffering from the disease and sat down to have tea. And I just had this revelation in holding her hand at that moment of how amazing the body is and the healing process, because she had just come from a tremendous community that offered her incredible social support with live drumming and dancing in a form of movement to an herbal tea that just really made her feel good, and additional support, all in the context of, you know, what might be like a Sunday mass for someone else. And it just impressed upon me that medications are kind of one tool within this tremendous toolbox that we have access to that can encourage healing on a deeper level. And it just, again, that was ties in the plant kind of with integrative medicine in the context of the slums of Brazil.
Absolutely. What a beautiful way to round that conversation up. Stephen, in Jan's, this is Jan Bonhoeffer we're talking about. I can't remember which episode he was in, but if you go to our Listen On Demand page and scroll down, you'll see his name. He was talking about the fact that we mustn't ever forget that we will die without love. And love is such a huge part. He talks about love as being actually a force, like a force field is the way that he talks about it. And he talked about the fact that, you know, you can have all the best medicines in the world, but if this is missing, and that's what that girl had really experienced, was that love in terms of community support and attention and, you know, and care, and that is a hugely important part of healing. Really interesting. Thank you so much. We have so much more to unpack today. So we will do that and hear some more plant stories from you, I'm quite sure, right after this commercial break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plants dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health. At Sophie, we bring together experts and voices who rarely cross paths. Our quest is to illuminate the ancient world of plant medicine and reimagine it for the connected age. Join us to explore new boundaries of digital personalized medicine with deep roots in the natural world, and hear from our community of international pioneers who are validating this new paradigm and improving how we feel, sleep, and cope with daily stresses naturally. Sophie.health, reconnecting people and plants.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back. A quick reminder before we dive back into the conversation to visit our special landing page for UK HR listeners at join.sophie.health/radio for all the information you need to join us and for your special 50% discount code radio50. Now, before the break, we heard Stephen talking about his back road into medicine, where he had to convince his dean to be able to volunteer in the slums of Brazil. And, you know, amidst all that poverty, he found Quatro Voeres, I think it was pronounced. That's my, you know, attempted at it anyway. Basically means four sticks, a health community. This health community, you know, yeah, had a garden and grew amazing medicinal plants and actually had a lab to create the medicine, which was then distributed for either very little money or for free. It was kind of like the first time Stephen really saw that journey from plant to medicine and saw that, you know, there is a real, you know, first line support there. Equally, you know, he was talking about the Umbanda community, where he had, you know, experience with the HIV medicine, the Western HIV medicine that was given out there, which is kind of like a very difficult 15 type drug regimen. Which is very difficult to get people to obviously do, you know, with that many things. But actually, when we're combining that with animistic beliefs and in their, you know, culture, colors were associated with days, you know, we got a much better, you know, percentage of people actually taking all of the different drugs. So very, very interesting. And so, Stephen, gosh, what a journey you've been on already, right? What are some of your kind of like favorite plant stories from all of your travels, right? Where a particular plant really stood out for you as having, I don't know, a particular big impact or was used by just many people and, you know, populations were benefiting from something. Any ideas that would stand out for you?
Yeah, a lot of ideas on that one. One that really comes to the surface is I was able to, with a close friend of mine, we spent a year traveling through South America and just, you know, on a few dollars a day, you know, just like Motorcycle Diaries, if anyone has ever read that book.
Yeah.
Really got to live that life. As I came into Bolivia and then Peru. One of the plants that really opened my eyes to the tremendous stigma that society can associate with a plant is a very controversial plant, right? Which is the coca plant. And all I had known of the coca plant from my background, mainly Midwestern United States, was that it was a horrible plant that resulted in a horrible substance that had tremendous detriment to our society. That was all I knew going in. And it was really one of the first major eye-opening experiences for me that the truth that I had been told and that I had witnessed and that I had lived in Midwestern United States was very different from the truth on another corner of the globe. And, close friends that I had met in Peru, we were preparing for the Camino del Inca, the Inca Trail. And I actually was very fortunate to spend 10 days. Most of us will sneak up the back end to see the Inktipuntu and the Sun Gate. But I had 10 days where I got to hike through the mountains. And close Peruvian friends said, listen, you need to remove all of this kind of garbage that you have related to the coca plant. And it's a tremendous tea that is kind of a subtle increase in energy and may have even the potential to prevent sirochi, which is altitude sickness. And for me as a physician, altitude sickness was something I was very concerned about. That could stop me in my tracks, could prevent me from continuing on that path. And somewhat reluctantly, I was definitely drinking yerba mate because many of my friends were Argentine at the time. But I also then tried la hoja de coca as a tea. And I will say that it just gave me that kind of subtle boost of energy, not different from, green tea, maybe a little bit pushed towards a coffee without a big drop afterwards. And, absolutely no potential for addiction. And I'm very happy to say not only the Inca Trail, but also a large, in the Cordillera Blanca, there are a number of mountains, one of them being Laguna Glacier that I climbed, drinking coca tea and not once got sirochi or altitude sickness. And again, it just was an introduction to a tea that was, for me, very mild, yet very helpful and potentially, right? I can't tell you for certain that it prevented altitude sickness, but may have had some minor role, whether through hydration or in the tea itself to prevent altitude sickness. And I would have missed out completely based on some preformed stigma, right? And beliefs that I had on false premises, that I knew nothing about this plant. And it really, for me, just flipped things upside down. That what a shame that we in Wisconsin, right, where I'm from, don't have access to this amazing plant, which probably is a much better alternative than, I hate to mention beverage companies, but sodas, right? And many of the things that we drink on a daily basis detrimental to our health. And this has been so demonized, and yet it likely is far better for our health than the majority of substances we're ingesting on a daily basis that are very legal. And it just really was eye-opening and enjoyed seeing a different side of this plant. And I couldn't bring it back, so I could only drink.
Don't you think that happens, though? I don't know if you've seen this in other cultures, but I think that this happens when we get to teacher plants like coca, like tobacco, like cannabis, like ayahuasca, like Amanita muscarina. When you take away the cultural link to it and you go after the psychoactive properties or whatever it is that makes these plants teacher plants, special plants that have, are often used by shamans or healers, whatever. When you take away the restraints that allow them to be used safely, and for me, the most important thing is respectfully, you take those away, you try to refine it, you try to get more of the psychoactive property, and the plant, that what happens at the end of that, to me, is like the plant bites back. Look where we are with the tobacco industry now. Tobacco is a teacher plant, used respectfully and in the way it's been very helpful, and coca is the same, and cannabis is the same, and all of those. Have you found that in other places?
Yeah, I think that it makes such logical and intuitive sense. And even, plants, I think, are the obvious example. Is you're hitting the nail on the head with coca. And again, we extract and oftentimes reduce these very complex substances, these very complex plants, into a single constituent. And that's the path that we oftentimes take. And a very similar Example would be, you know, like an apple, right? We can distill an apple down to very basic sugar, which then, you know, many of us consume in large amounts, and it's a poison. Versus the apple, that same sugar in the amount in the apple, given with water, given with fiber, given in that container, which is the apple, you know, convey health benefits. And I think that just is feels so intuitive and makes such logical sense to me that I can't believe we're missing that point. And I think we're finally starting to understand it in nutrition. And I truly believe that that next leap will be in medicinal plants that we would apply, that this you know, in cannabis, it's called entourage effect, right? This number of constituents together, when interacting as it has co-evolved with our physiology for so many years, is a little bit more subtle. It may not knock your pain out, right, tomorrow. It's a little bit more of a subtle feeling. And Pamela, I know you know a lot about this and can expand on this, but that it's also not going to have so many side effects that we're chasing on the other end, or those detrimental effects that, well, if we use it long term, are gonna appear.
I think that's such a great analogy you just used there with the apple and the sugar. I hadn't got to that one, but yes. And of course, sugar is hugely addictive. It's almost like we take that one constituent that people think, oh, this is the really active one. Well, we know they work in synergy probably, but we make a good guess and then we refine to that. But if it does have a great action, there is an addictive quality of that. All these teacher plants have become addictive plants, you know, in their own ways when they're used inappropriate or when they're refined, you know. What really fascinates me with plants is when you see the one chemical that people think is the really active one, and then within the plant, you notice that there's normally that very active chemical can indeed cause problems in the body. And many, many times within the plant chemistry, you find the antidote to that. So kava kava is a super example of that, which is still banned in the UK today. You know, the kava lactones, we know that they hurt the liver. They damage the liver, but it has a certain ratio of glutathione in there, which means that it will protect the liver as the kava lactones pass through. And then what happened was a standardized extract got made where they messed with the ratio, increased the amount of kava lactones, massively reduced the glutathiones. Guess what happened? Liver damage. So now we have a plant banned. So it's so important to understand that. And I wonder, so you have a big history of working with cannabis. Can you maybe go into that a little bit? You sort of started to talk to, you know, that piece around, you know, the individual constituents or the kind of group effect. Can you say a little bit about that and why cannabis was so interesting to you as a pain medicine?
Yeah, well, you're asking me in a few minutes to unravel 10 years of my life, Pamela.
I'm sorry. But nothing like putting you on the spot, Stephen.
Let's jump into it, because what you were talking about really triggered for me this idea, and I know you're well aware of adaptogens, right? And this is just a whole branch of medicinal plants and plant medicine that we haven't explored thoroughly in Western medicine, and I think that could be of such tremendous benefit. And again, my family medicine understanding of this is a very complex substance derived from a plant that helps the body find homeostasis or balance. And just to your point, within that complex soup, right, within that complex soup that comes from the plant will be constituents that are antagonistic. You know, one might bring us up and the other might bring us down. And in medicine, we usually just focus on one. We have stimulants, right, for ADHD. We have depressants to help you sleep. And we don't have something that might thread the needle to create that balance or harmony, which then harnesses the innate healing potential of the body. Cannabis has the same thing, right? If you think about even the two major cannabinoids, THC, which we associate with intoxication, right? The intoxicating cannabinoid, and CBD have in many ways almost opposite effects, right? In terms of its relationship to neuroprotection or bradycardia or even psychosis, right? In incredibly high doses of THC, CBD might potentially serve as an antidote to some of those effects. And the plant has within it these mechanisms that balance that we're missing out on when we just pick out a single constituent. The flip side of that is pulling out the single constituent is incredibly impactful and effective. And that's why, you know, our drugs are so impactful. And I wouldn't say I'm a fan of drugs, but I utilize them all the time as a physician, and they're remarkably effective. And if somebody needs pain relief very quickly, this is exactly what's needed. And I think the problem is that we've kind of pushed everyone into that Western paradigm of utilizing incredibly impactful, powerful medicines when many could benefit from these that dance with physiology and help us find balance in some of these kind of earlier symptoms. And I think cannabis is like that too. And it's tough to unpack all of cannabis. And we're in the final stages with tremendous researchers from Montefiore and Albert Einstein of finishing up a 4-arm randomized double-blind control trial on cannabis. And it really is my hunch, one, that we do not know how to dose cannabis at all. And that's the problem with plant medicines, because there are so many constituents. It's not just I'm taking 850 milligrams of metformin, right? It's much difficult, as you well know, Pamela, to dose a plant medicine. I also have a very firm belief that we've been going about it wrong in trying to fit plant medicines into a Western paradigm. I think cannabis someday will be revealed that it will be most effective and cause the least negative impact when we utilize it once in a while. And it's not a daily medicine that is needed for pain. And some people may need it daily for pain, right? And then we may come to that point. But I think if it's one of multiple tools that are used in an integrative approach, it can take the edge off a really bad day, right? Yet it's not going to numb the receptors that we need a higher and higher dose, as we've seen with opioids, as we see with any one of those kind of teacher plants that you've named. The receptors get tired, they get used to it, and we have to up the dose and the side effects come. No, we should
including cannabis as a teacher plant. And when you were saying about the THC, I always get that wrong here, and CBD, when it's THC, not TCH, isn't it? THC. I always get that wrong. Right? Yeah. So when they breed strains that are high in that, because we want all the psychoactive properties, which is what we're finding, you know, there's been studies looking at what you're finding on the streets these days, you know, the skunk and super skunk strains, all of that, the amount of times that you're getting psychosis is going up massively. It's another exact example of that. And when you were saying about pain, so I know that the herbs in my dispensary behind us, they are not nearly as strong as a pharmaceutical painkiller, and I use them when I need to use them. But what we do when we look to match pain and a herb is we will look at the quality of the pain. So some herbs are really good for cold pain. Some herbs are good for hot pain if it's hot and throbbing. Some are good if it's sharp, if it feels like it's tearing. So we dig really into the quality of the pain, and we know there's certain herbs that can help with that. They're not blocking pain receptors. They're not strong enough to do that, but they are supporting the body not to feel so much pain.
Yeah, I think that's such a key point, and I'm glad that you brought it up, because I think that what we're doing to the cannabis plant is exactly what we've done to the apple. And, you know, again, we're supersizing the sugar molecule that everybody loves sugar. Of course, it's amazing, but it's going to cause problems with us. And we're doing the same thing with THC, and we're supersizing it, and we're losing the relationship to the plant. And all we care about is the single constituent. And that's a recipe, not just for psychosis, but all side effects will be increased as we supersize the dose of a single constituent. And it just is like so clear as day when you've spent time working with plants and working in that area that you want to scream. And it's part of the reason why I even got into a Schedule I substance, right? And as a physician dealing with this was the hope that we might not go down a tobacco path, that we might not go down an opioid path, that we might not go down a sugar path, and the hope that education could say, this is so rich and in so many ways can help us if we utilize the package as such. And it comes in a million different packages, and that's the beauty of it too, is it can be nuanced to the person, but don't just pick one and supersize it. That's a recipe for disaster. We've walked down that path 100 times. And unfortunately, that's what we're watching unfold.
That is such music to my ears to hear you speaking of that, and that you also as a, you know, as a physician are in a position where you can say that. The herbalist can shout that till, you know, from the rooftops, but there's not so many people listening to us. But, you know, when people within medicine are talking that way, that just brings me so much hope. It really does. I think it's incredible. It's so important because we are missing, you know, the real skill of use at working with these plants if we go back down that opioid route again. With any of them, you know, they will cause problems and they will be banned, and we will be the poorer for that, for sure.
But I think that's one of the big pushes for me for integrative medicine is, in many ways, it's harm reduction. Cannabis is, I mean, it's just ubiquitous. You walk out on the streets of New York, every corner, it's people are utilizing cannabis. And for us not to be aware of that and not to speak truthfully of it and not to be a trusted source of information and education, you know, the two have been so divorced in the, in my history, right, as a physician, that they should not be. We should be aware of that. We should be able to speak to that. We should be able to guide patients to utilize them in a good way. And when we don't know how to do that, we should conduct the research to learn how to better do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Stephen. Please don't go anywhere because we will have a little bit more time at the end of the show today because we don't have Evie with us to maybe hear another plant story from you. But for just now, we are going to go to a commercial break. And after that, we're going to meet the Herbal Hero of the Week. And Vincent is going to have some feedback on our conversation today as well. So we'll be back just right after this.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Stop suffering with pet-related allergies when near dogs and cats. Great news, you can feel safe around pets with Nasal Guard for pet lovers. Nasal Guard topical gel blocks pet dander, hair, and dust mites from entering your nasal passages. Try Nasal Guard for pet lovers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Nature's Medicine for Modern Living, a people and plant dialogue hosted by Sophie.Health on UK Health Radio. And now it's time for our Herbal Hero of the Week. So spring is definitely underway here in the west of Scotland. We tend to be a few weeks behind the rest of the UK and quite a lot of the US. So I'm turning my attention to the spring plants that are appearing round about me. We already spoke about nettle back in December when Mo Wild was here, and she was talking about the year that she spent living on a wild food diet. And that's the first plant I always recognize coming up at this time of the year. But the other herb that starts to appear right next to nettle, and one that I use a lot, is cleavers. So this herb is widely known as Sticky Willy in the UK. You may have other names for it, or goosegrass even. The Latin name is Galium apiarine, which I think sounds a whole lot more elegant. If you don't know what I'm talking about, think back to childhood, taking long strands of this very sticky plant and trying to get it on the backs of your friends or even maybe your school teacher without them noticing. That is the one that I'm talking about. So this plant is in the coffee family. It's our native coffee. you may be surprised to know. As a herbal student, I did actually go through the pain of collecting the hundreds of seeds in the autumn to make it into ground coffee. And I don't recommend it, but in a pinch, it would do. And it was certainly recognizable as having a coffee taste to it. But the key thing about this herb is it is an incredible lymphatic tonic. So it helps to support the lymphatic stimulation of the body. And it's coming up in the springtime when our bodies are maybe a little bit sluggish after all that stodgy food and maybe moving a little bit less than we would in the warmer months of the year. And it's helping to gently detox the body. Now, I need to point out here, I am no fan of a big detox because your body is detoxing just fine every day. Thank you very much. If it wasn't, you would be in a hospital. So I'm not a great fan of the huge detoxing fads that go around, but a little bit of gentle help to support your body to do it a little bit better is a really good idea. And Cleavers really comes to our aid. It partners brilliantly with young nettle tops. It can help to clear uric acid from the body. So that can gather in the joints and cause some pain and inflammation. So we were talking about pain a little bit earlier on in terms of helping people with arthritic pain and things like that. I would be thinking of getting the lymph moving, getting the blood moving, helping things, warming the joints up. And that's herbally how we would go along pain relief rather than trying to block the pain receptors and see whether we can do enough to make people comfortable in that way. So as a support to the lymphatic system, it's really useful to help people who are at risk of lymphedema. And indeed, I have seen it used over years to keep lymphedema steady. So that's where the lymphatic return is really compromised in the body. It has a great affinity to all the glands. So people who get swollen glands in their necks when they're coming down with something, their immune system is actively fighting, or people who regularly get tonsillitis, kids with tonsillitis, really helpful for that. One of the nicest ways to enjoy Cleavers is just to pick it fresh. You will need to bundle it into a circle because you can't really cut this stuff and put it in a jar of water overnight. And in the morning, the water has this really incredible cucumber flavor. It's one of the only herbs that's really good as a cold infusion. You could also juice it and give yourself a shot of the juice in your morning smoothie. So it's a little bit like wheatgrass in that way. It's like this deep, vibrant green, and you know it's just absolutely packed with vitamins and minerals. A word, though, you need a really heavy-duty juicer to deal with this stuff. I actually use a hand-based old-fashioned mincer, which does it brilliantly. But yeah, just be sure, as I've always said, to follow safe picking guidelines. If you're not sure that you have the right plant, don't pick it. But if you're confident that you know what you're doing, you can start to pick young Cleavers anytime from now, really. So that's Sticky Willy for you, as it's known around here. And now, Vincent, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this week's discussion with Stephen.
Yeah, well, Stephen, we've talked, a lot of about plants, obviously, and you know, how that works within integrative medicine. But then at the beginning, you kind of talked a little bit about rituals, right? Some of the rituals that, you observed in Brazil or other places in South America. And I kind of wondered, kind of here in the West, I guess, we've kind of lost our rituals a little bit. I think we're adapting a few new ones, right? Meditation, we're kind of doing that. I guess the English cup of tea is a real ritual. I mean, there's nothing that can't be solved without a cup of tea. And that is a genuine ritual, which I have seen, people, it really changes people's moods. But, I sort of wonder whether ritual, well, I know, from hearing you speak, that ritual definitely has a real place still in modern medicine, even. Do you think it's something that, I don't know, maybe in your new work as director, but maybe in other ways that we here need to come up with new rituals while going through, medicinal periods? Should that be something that becomes prescribed or that someone needs to think about, like an IKEA, set that you put together, right? Yes, here's your medicine, but it comes with these rituals.
Yeah, no, Vincent, sometimes, like, I think this happened on the last podcast where I feel like you're reading my mind a little bit. it's not a paranoid thought. It's a good one. front and center for me. I just have over and over thinking about, right? We have tremendous data that healthy lifestyle can prolong health span, right? That we can live a longer, healthier life and what we call compressed morbidity, that we have less days that we're infirm or not feeling well or impacted by that. And it's, we all know healthy lifestyle, right? I've done it for decades. You see your doctor, exercise more, eat better, right? Sleep, you know, a sufficient amount, and how challenging it is. What has been front and center for me that I think a ton about on a daily basis is what, you know, we call a healthy mindset. And I oftentimes say that the odds are so stacked against us, you know, with a fast food joint on every corner and a bar on every corner where I grew up and a bag of chips around every aisle and just the temptations that prey on, you know, millennia of neuroscience to go down the wrong path are everywhere, every corner we turn, that we have to actively cultivate a healthy mindset and not in a dull way. Otherwise, it's not going to work, right? And I do find personally that ritual is the best antidote that I have for that. And I think that we're starting to explore this even more as we see psychedelics come into mainstream medicine and this idea of set and setting. Specifically with psychedelics, that means that the mindset you have that when going into a psychedelic experience and the setting that you do it in tremendously impact how it affects you. I think that is true of anything that we put in our mouth. And I know that that's a stretch, but if I sit down and my cup of tea, you know, I have a good thought that I'm going to just take a breath here. I'm going to let the worries of the world go away. I'm having my ritual. I'm ingesting this amazing plant that has healing properties for me. And we embellish that ritual in many ways. I think it gives it, it imbues it with more power. And it also brings to the forefront something that I call with patients, I call it the accessible memory. Meaning that you go and oftentimes would see your family doctor once a year for an annual visit. And beforehand, you're eating well and, you know, you're getting ready for the visit. Maybe even after you take a couple things away and then your life gets busy and that gets tucked away. And those rituals, in a way, bring that healthy mindset back to that accessible memory, that reminder memory of like, yeah, oh, I'm taking care of myself. I'm making sure I'm doing things right. I'm going to go for my walk today. I'm going to have my cup of tea. And I think rituals are so important. And whether we need new ones or not, I would say yes, of course. Like invent not only new ones, but that are very personal to you. But then I also love these collective ones. To think, you know, and again, I've always been a little envious of you and one of my closest friends is from Battersea in London, that all of you get together and are having tea at this kind of same time of the day in my mind, right? Is like, oh, you know, we're all taking a break. And I lived in Spain and it was like the siesta. Everybody at the same time is just relaxing after lunch. And we never did that. You just plowed through and you kept working. And we know that these kind of breaks and these rituals are very good. And then can we harness that also to be, okay, health front and center. I'm taking care of myself. This is high on my priority list, in addition to paying my bill, getting my work done, walking the dog, you know, the million things that pull at us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as horrible as smoking is, there was definitely something to say for smoke breaks, right? That you know, like in most companies where, like you say, right, where you're just working through lunch or whatever it is, right? But yeah, for those, you know, back in the day when lots of people were still smoking, right, there were always moments where you could just literally just take, you know, a moment and yeah, just break away from the day and then continue again. So, you know, it's funny how we, you know, yeah, in one way, obviously much healthier, right, to not smoke, but to have a similar ritual that you could have at work, right? And I guess
Make it vaping, because like in my way, that's kind of even just more problematic. So it's like, let's not swap it for that. But yeah, you're right, something, yeah.
Yeah,
but exactly. And to those lines, you're oftentimes doing it with someone else. You're going outside in nature, right, or in some fresh air. And then what are you doing? You know, you're taking a deep and so many. I had a idea ages ago. I hope somebody runs with this. And we called it Quitterettes. That it was like a cigarette box, and then you pull it out, and it was a rolled up, maybe a breathing exercise, or you know, some information. And you'd still go out with your friend, and maybe have a Quitterette and share that. It obviously is not as enticing as nicotine, but I never give up dreaming, you know, to that point of these rituals. How can we not supersize one ingredient and make it go wrong, and instead, you know, utilize it as a way for a healthy mindset and to bring that front and center?
I quite often do prescribe to my patients that they should have, we start with 2 5-minute breaks a day. And in that break, they're allowed to do anything that it's not, as long as it's not useful and you're not doing so. You can't put a washing on, you can't do the dishes. Like you have to step outside if you can. And if you can't, you look out of the window. And during that time, you make your cup of tea. And it's incredible the amount of people who just go, oh, I couldn't possibly do that. 2 5-minute breaks, I couldn't, no, I couldn't do that. You know, and those rituals are so important. Like even I always think we're just coming out of the winter now, but you know, we have all those. So, you know, we have Halloween going into the winter. That's a big community ritual. We get together, and then you know, in the UK, we then have Guy Fawkes a week later, and then you kind of know it's going to be nothing till Christmas. And then you have these big festivals of light right in the center of the winter, you know. And then when the Christmas and New Year is done, then you know you're looking at the long dark of January, February until oof, it feels like everyone's kind of coming out of there now. We do move in those ritualistic ways, I think. And linking into the seasons for me is a really important way to remember those rituals to bring that to that accessible memory. I hadn't thought of putting it like that, Stephen. That was really interesting.
Yeah, I think it's so important. And that downtime, I think the hard part is convincing ourselves, right? Even myself, because I just pictured, as you said, that 5 minutes, I picked up my phone and I'm swiping on something, right? And on top of like tobacco and alcohol and sugar, it's like the phone comes in. But you know, the more that we kind of talk about it and say that this is good and say that taking a break is wonderful for your mind and for your health, and to surround it with those rituals, maybe chatting with a friend as we have our cup of tea, right? I think that those are the one way that we're going to have some inroads into that healthy mindset, and we have to harness it.
Yeah, and then we can think about the sort of, you know, the yearly rituals of the season. So there's like the plants that I'm always looking for. Okay, your sticky willy back. We just nettles are starting to come. Okay, it's nettle soup time. It's time to make a tonic. Time to move our bodies. Time to think about our lymphatic system. You know, and then we're going, you know, through. So you've got the kind of the community ones around the year, I think of, and then you know you have these little daily ones like your cup of tea and things like that, and each one of them just helps you anchor into that, you know, being aware in the moment.
Well, and that's and to bring it back, right? Full circle of the reason why we're here, Sophie, right? And the idea that these plants and kind of handpicked by, you know, amazing people like Dr. Michael Balick and you, Pamela, to say that this is a plant that really is worthy of your use, and then to surround that with the community, and then to create it so that it's accessible, easy to do. And now I even hear that it's kind of intertwined with smart devices that
Wearables, yeah.
You can get the feedback that, wow, I'm watching my deep sleep improve, right? Or fill in the blank that this is really a remarkable project that we're all on to not only showcase that this is a possibility, but to reinforce that with some solid data that these are things that are good for us.
Stephen, you couldn't have ended the show any more perfectly than that. It's almost as though we'd scripted it, and quite honestly, we didn't. Thank you so much for being with us today. If we could fit you in again on the run, we'd love to. I think we could talk on and on about plants forever, but we know you have a very important piece of work to get stuck into now. So we look forward to hearing how that's going. All the very best. So next week we're not going to be live because Johan, founder of UK Health Radio, who is here with us every week and looks after us, but you guys don't hear him. He's going to be off speaking at the 9th European Congress of Local Governments, discussing new and growing challenges to healthcare systems. It's a really prestigious event, and our huge congratulations to Johan for being asked to be a speaker and a panelist. And since we can't drive the show without him, we're going to have a week off next week. But the show will still be running. It's a great opportunity for you to hear one of our favorite shows over again, which is our interview from last week with Trey Lowe from The Apprentice, talking about his incredible journey and what was really going on for him behind the scenes while it looked like he was living his dream on Top of the Pops with his band, The Architect. So do tune in for that. I wonder if he'll still be in The Apprentice by then, or if Lord Sugar will have fired him. So that's it from us today. We look forward to being back with you live on Monday, the 11th of March at 3 p.m. UK time.
Wake out in the way out, the stars keep all trying to shine.